Thank you for tuning into the AJ Nashville podcast. Here's your host, ajnashville.com. Thank you for tuning into the AJ Nashville podcast. Here's your host, ajnashville.com.
Hey guys, Alex here, ajnashville.com, here with the guest today, Greg Pease, right?
That's right.
Music City experts, Marine veteran, thank you for your service, by the way. We're here to talk about not real estate today, but we're going to talk about something different, kind of the things that Greg has been through in his life and what's built him to be on the path that he is today. Greg, if I was to reach out to you, if I wanted to buy, sell, do any type of home transaction, how would I reach you?
Yeah, so the best way would probably be email, and it's just going to be Greg, G-R-E-G, at musiccityexperts.com.
That's pretty easy. It's an easy email. So let's get into the hard stuff. So Greg's got a story here to tell. Some of you will recognize bits and pieces of this story because it's very similar to some things that I've went through, but Greg's got his own story, and I want him to share this with you. I want those of you that are out there that are listening that may have went through some things like that to know that you're not alone. I mean, these are things, literally you were sitting across from me, and I told you what I said. This sounds a lot like bits and pieces of mine. But Greg, I'm going to let you jump in and I'm going to let you do your thing, man. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And Alex, thanks for having me on here and everybody listening. I appreciate you guys listening in on it. And I am honored to be able to share the story and to be in the place that I am today. And through hearing other people's story, I know it has helped me along the way. So, I look forward to, being able to help other people through my process. I was born in Camden, New Jersey, and that's where it all kind of started. My biological mother passed away of cancer when I was 3 years old, and at the time I didn't understand what death was. I mean, I remember even going to the funeral and viewing her in the casket. I can actually remember the images in my mind, but I wasn't aware that she wouldn't be coming back. And then So that was the first exposure with that, and then my stepmom was my mom's friend, and my dad was a truck driver, has always been a truck driver his whole life, as far as I know, still is. So he would do over the road hauling, so he would seldomly be home, and so pretty quickly in my stepmother was living in the house to help take care of the kids, and so then that really grew into. A toxic household, toxic parental relationship for me. My stepmom, I don't know the reasons why. She was abusive.
I was just going to ask you. So you mentioned abusive. Are we talking physical, mental, verbal? Or are we talking about a combination of abuse? What type of abuse are we talking about here?
So, yeah, no, thank you. And so the for asking about the clarification, I would say probably the worst, honestly, is the psychological aspect of things that I still deal with unpacking to this day.
Right.
But the visually seen part was the physical abuse. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of very, very graphic physical abuse. But even past that, at the time, the physical abuse felt like the worst thing. And right. So whatever you said didn't matter because the physical abuse is what I was worried about. But being later in life, now I realize all the psychological costs of that I still have to unpack.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's difficult. It's difficult to go through some of the things that you've been through. And you're right. It takes a lot of time to start saying, you know what, I've been holding this in for this long. And as men, and especially with you being a Marine, it's very easy to keep that stuff within because we're not supposed to show emotion. I mean, those of you that are listening, you can't see Greg, but Greg's a very stout individual. If you saw him in an alley, you may be a little bit intimidated if he was walking towards you upset. But the fact of the matter is, that's even more the reason for people like him and people like myself to hold those things in and not show those emotions. So it takes time. It takes time and maturity for us to start to get to the point where we're like, all right, we got to deal with this shit.
Well, absolutely. And also finding the outlet of who you can talk to about it. Outside of it was, my journey has been hard outside of people that have experienced it, which I've been blessed with much like yourself, getting to cross paths with people that have experienced similar situations and being able to share. And I've asked you things today that I'll take away. But outside of that, it's hard for people to even fathom what that individual like yourself, myself, went through as a child.
Right. I think it's hard to fathom because people don't realize that it's real. You know, right. You watch a Lifetime movie and you see a person that's a child that gets abused and gets starved, and you think that happens on movies, you know, and it's because, thankfully, you know, the majority of people don't have to go through this. But I will say this, and you and I both agree on this point. This is what's helped form us as human beings. You know, we talked a little bit about religion and we didn't dive very deep into it, but I do feel like God chooses those who can handle the hardest and gives them the rough spots in life. And I think that you're a testament to it. Here you are driving forward, doing what you have to do and carrying on your mission of success. You know, it's inspiring, and people that are listening should be inspired by that.
That's awesome. I appreciate that. And absolutely, I mean, my goal and what does one of the biggest factors that does carry me to each next day is how many people can I touch? How many people can I help? I mean, I know that the journey that I went through was very, very, very dark. I went through some very, very dark places, and there's no reason for anybody to have to go through that.
Right.
especially, you know, when you are neglected by, you know, one of the most purest things of you know, essentially that parenthood, whether it be mother or father.
A parental relationship, a person that's supposed to nurture you. So we talked about this briefly. At one point in time, you said, screw it, I'm done, I'm going to pack up. Now, that sounds like something a 25-year-old adult says. Screw it, I'm done, I'm going to pack up. But you weren't 25. How old were you when the first time you tried to leave?
So roughly, it'd be about 10 years old.
Okay. So about 10 years old, you said, I had enough. Packing up, I'm leaving. Obviously, where were you headed? Were you going to a family member's house? Did you take anything with you? Tell me about that.
Yeah, and that's a great question. And honestly, you know, I held that when you say that, I had no clue where I was going. And that's what held me so long to running away. And honestly, I judged myself for upwards of two decades afterwards for allowing that to take place until that age.
Right.
And that was a hard challenge. And ultimately, I didn't have anywhere to go. So I actually left out to literally go on the streets.
Well, I want to touch on something that you just said, too. It's human of us to look back and say, why didn't we leave? Why didn't we do this? But at that age, we don't necessarily have the capacity. I mean, you just kind of verified what I'm talking about when you said, you know, I had nowhere to go. It's not like we can say, hey, I'm going to go stay on my buddy's couch. I'm going to go do this. So those of you that may have been through something very similar, it's easy for us to look back and say, why didn't I do something that intervened with the situation? But you're not necessarily the person to blame. A lot of times we don't have the capacity to escape the situation that we're in, and that's what keeps us tied to what it is that we're going through. So you packed up. You put did you throw a bunch of stuff in a bag? Did you get one of those knapsacks and take off, or what'd you do?
So I left with nothing but the clothes I was wearing very carefully and quietly at nighttime.
Okay. So you left. You're on the streets. Is it cold at this point? I know New Jersey gets deathly cold.
So there was definitely, I mean, I have vivid memories of not sure if I would make it through the night in New Jersey. I remember as a kid, I mean, literally sitting there, obviously, you know, when sleeping, in the tightest possible ball I could be in, trying to tuck things, you know, arms, fingers, anything into clothes, trying to breathe on myself. But I definitely remember the thought, for sure, you know, the self conversation of saying, well, I guess this is where we die. I didn't think that I could even make it to morning.
Right. And now as a kid, obviously you don't have wads of money in your pocket. So nurturing, feeding yourself. You know, what did you do to you still? Did you go out and get scraps out of the trash? How'd you feed yourself?
So for the I remember for the first there was a small period of time where oddly enough I actually still went to school.
Wow.
And you know, that was a safe place. I didn't have no reason to not be there. And then you know, it was shelter, and I was able to get food. I remember one morning. As I somewhere through the night, I'd stay mobile as I could sometimes at the night, and then sometimes I'd curl up. But I don't understand how, but I mean, maybe the time frame, maybe the area, I don't know. But I remember one time, you know, well before, let's say maybe it's 6 a.m, who knows? And then, like, it was like a groundskeeper guy or something like that, someone that worked for the school, and like asked me what I was doing. And he, and then he offered, did I have like football practice or wrestling practice? He's like, did your parents forget to come get you or something like that? And I'm just like, oh, yeah, yeah, that, yeah, that's what happened.
Right.
But like, I don't even know how. I remember he brought me in this shed, you know, maintenance area, and he had a kerosene heater, and like I just could not stop shaking. But when he would come in and ask me a question, I would hold back as much shivering as I could because I didn't want him to think the situation was bad as it was.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So, hey, so go ahead.
You don't want to be exposed at that point. At that point, you don't know if this person's got the police on the way, has your parents on the way. You know, whatever the situation may be. So, so obviously, you know, it's crazy when you look at what the human mind is capable of and what it's capable of analyzing, especially at a young age like that. You know, so here we are, we're in a shed, kerosene heater, you're getting a little bit of warmth, then it's back out, back in the wild.
Yeah, yeah. So, so schooling, and I don't know how long that lasted, you know, but eventually that did run dry. I believe I actually, once it was figured out, I believe I physically ran away once I figured out that they figured out that I wasn't going home. So that couldn't have lasted too long. And then from there, you know, it's horrible. But, I mean, I would steal from like, gas stations. And sometimes there would be, those, but they would be bigger. So like where people maybe sell produce on the side of the road or something, yeah, but maybe
like some stands or something like that.
Right. And then, I remember I found one time, and I think it must've been in the front of someone's house. It was pretty big. I mean, they had it built with like plywood and such. And then, so for windows where it would be like a little hut, a little house, you know, and then for windows, they had like really thick, like the 3M, vinyl. And so, I remember I felt horrible, man. Cause I, like, especially as I got older, I'm thinking like, man, how much did that, you know, what did that, how did that affect that business owner? But,
right.
And I cut into that vinyl and went in there. I remember, you know, overfeeding myself in that area one time.
Yeah. Well, I think it, at that age, you know, it's all about survival. It's all about making it. And, you know, it's unfortunate that you had to go through something like that. But the thing is you're remorseful for it. It tells you're at survival at that point. You know, you're trying to figure it out. So now you're carrying forward. And eventually you end up in some type of youth detention or something like that, correct?
Yeah, finally I find myself into the you know, detention center of sorts, and bounced around a little bit place to place. And you know, I end up finding myself like to the point of like a detention center where things were locked up and such. And, I did not understand that. I actually didn't comprehend at first, that. So I was given a sentencing, if you will, for a juvenile of a period of time. And as that period of time came closer, you know, it was honestly, I remember being really happy being locked up.
Right.
I was very safe. You know, sheltered. I had a pillow to sleep on. It was temperature control. Like the things that we totally take for granted. I was very, very stoked about these things. And then to find out that being good, that I had to go back home. That was devastating. And
it was almost like a punishment for doing well. It's, hey, you know,
it wasn't almost like a punishment. I mean, it literally was, you know, it literally was almost to be tortured for doing well.
So, I mean, what do you do in that situation? I can only imagine what runs through your head at this point. You're a little bit older, a little bit wiser. You've got some schooling under you. But most of all, you've been away from the abuse. You still remember the abuse, but you've been, not, I don't want to say untouchable, but when you've been abused for so long and you have a one-day break, it's like, it seems like it's a year. And then when it comes back and the abuse starts again, it seems like, oh, shit, you know, I'm never going to – a day then turns into a year, you know, it seems like. So you're faced with potentially going home. What do? You get back in trouble? Do you run away? Do you run away from the detention? Tell me what you did.
Yeah, so and I didn't have any intentions of running away from the detention center because, once again, I mean, really, and I understood at the time. Sometimes we don't understand or appreciate things until we miss them, but I understood how well I had it at the time. So I definitely didn't have intentions on running away. And I made a very conscious decisions to do things that would be against the rules. And, you know, eventually – First, I literally did them, you know, just bull nose, just you know, making sure that I would be in trouble. And then eventually I figured out, I mean, come on, you know, if I have to stay in trouble to stay safe, so let's have some fun being in trouble.
Right. Let's make it a good time. Yeah. So did the counselors or the staff there ever catch on when you were doing the blatant stuff, you know, like you talked about, if they said go left, you went right. At some point, did they say, hey, what's going on? You spent all this time doing so well. Why now?
Yeah, no, and absolutely. And when they asked, and at the time, you know, I was comfortable enough, obviously, being out of reach of my stepmom because, you know, and again, you know, some very, very gory things happen. You know, I fear for my life for her. And so being out of reach of her, knowing that she couldn't even get in if she wanted to,
right.
I did feel safe enough. And I did share with people that I was being abused at home. My belief is that being a child, being misbehaving, being misunderstood, I don't think that they understood the level of, I think maybe they thought like he doesn't want to be there. He doesn't like his stepmom.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, honestly, that even created a psychological cost, you know, like thinking right. like, is this that big of a deal? And, you know, today I understand that, you know, while I've moved on, it was a huge deal.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's the thing in the situation when you're in the deep of it, you don't realize how big of a deal it is. You know, and as you grow older, you start to see that and you start to reflect back and you realize, wow, you know, I was in deeper than I thought. And like you talked about earlier, you know, at the time, you didn't have the capacity to make a change. You know, looking back now, you do. You know, the one thing I want to say about what you've done is you've taken a very negative situation and you've built on it. And I see from talking to you, there's a lot of motivation behind it. There's a lot of will. And you and I kind of talked about this. You know, you can't drag me down any deeper than I've already been, you know. And that's something that you've experienced as well. And I really feel like people, and hear me out when I say this. I'm not saying that you have to go through a hard time in order to achieve and be successful. But I feel like people that have been down at the bottom tend to rise up and exceed what their initial expectations are. So
I definitely agree with that, Alex. I mean, once you know, it's near, and that's why, you know, I really appreciate what you're doing, and forevermore and until my time expires, I'm definitely gonna be out to serve and help others. Yeah. But to get out of that place is so grueling, so hard, so many things against you, so many mental blocks that you have, that once you get out of it, you know, you have walked the flames, you have walked the fire, and you know what you're now capable of.
Yeah, it's definitely tested you. That's kind of like, you know, we talked about in the beginning, you joined the Marines, you know, there's a lot of testing that goes with that as well. So with you going through everything and then going through life, what people perceive as being difficult, they have no idea. And the great thing about most people is they judge things based on the surface. And I say that with sarcasm because it's really about what's deep inside people. You know, sitting here and having the opportunity to talk with you for the past, you know, 2 hours or so, you start to learn a lot about people, especially when you're having those, I want to say intimate conversations. Obviously, I don't mean them that way, but the conversations where you really start to understand the core of a person and you gain respect for people. I have a lot more respect for you now than I did when you walked in the door, simply knowing that, hey, this man's been through a lot. You know, and there's still more to come. That's the biggest thing. You know, we're running low on time here with this, but you still have a whole nother chapter that you experienced after. You know, you'd been in detention. They eventually came to you and said, hey, look, if you don't straighten your butt up, where are you headed to? You're headed to prison. And so you made some decisions. Tell me about those decisions.
Yeah, so and I definitely was blessed with having it was a lady, and I don't remember her name, but she sat down, and, you know, like the people were at, hey, why are you acting this way? Why are you being, you know, hey, you know, my mom's abused me. I don't want to go home. They're just kind of like, all right, you know. Mm-hmm. But when she sat down and talked something, whatever she's seen, you know, and for whatever reason that she was put in my path, but she discussed with me, you know, what the path looked like with what I was doing right now, mm-hmm. that just inevitably where that goes, and that's what it is. And then what the path could look like if we made some changes. And she vowed to me that she would get me out of a lockdown detention facility and into a group home.
Mm-hmm.
And then that sounded, I didn't know what that was. I asked, and I thought that sounded pretty good. And she was able to get that done. It was really odd when I went in the group home. Say there was like 6 or 7 kids. Nothing's locked. It was literally a house.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to a regular high school. I had a job. The only thing I thought was funny, and I would literally laugh at the other kids, you know, not maliciously, but this was their last stop before getting locked up.
Yeah.
And they thought it was horrible.
Right.
This was my first step after getting locked up, and I thought this was the best ever.
It's perspective. Everything is about perspective, and that's what leads you to the success that you're going to continue to experience and that you have experienced. Everything's about perspective. You know, because we can look at this and we can say, man, I was abused. I was beaten. I was starved. I was, you know, verbally abused. Hell, I was called everything but a child of God. And I could look at it and say, and that's why I can't do well today. Or I can take that and say, you know what, that's why I'm going to do great things today. Because I want to make sure that my family never experiences that. I want to make sure I never go through that again. And so it's all about perspective. And like you talked about those kids in that group home, they thought it was the worst place ever. And you thought it was the best place that can be. And eventually somebody came by and had a visit with you that changed your future even more.
It sure did. And that's kind of a funny story because, you know, obviously we know that I served in the Marine Corps. And so I actually – I didn't think that I could actually serve in the military with everything that had taken place up to this point.
Right.
And so I actually was in high school. It was a regular high school. I actually got a high school diploma, which, mm-hmm. again, at the time, very, 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 very proud of that. I was like, oh, my God, you know. But being at Ray High School, I was actually trying to – impress a female, and that was over by an Army recruiter. Mm-hmm. And so then the Army recruiter actually is the one that actually addressed me and discussed about going, and I agreed with the Army recruiter. And then when I went back and told the whatever the titles may be for the people at the group home, I said, well, maybe you want to look at some other avenues.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, I told her no. I was afraid that I didn't want to risk anything. The Army recruiter, of course, told me he could get me in. I didn't want to risk anything. I'm like, this is amazing. This is a future. We are not about to rock this boat.
Right.
But she actually called all the other recruiting stations. She uh-huh. called them all and said, hey, maybe, you know, talk to this kid, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And I didn't know that. And then I actually was packed up. I was sitting on the front step of the group home. And this is one name I will not forget. It was Staff Sergeant Janos. Which was a Marine recruiter, pulled up, and he said, hey, big dog, what are you doing? I said, I'm waiting to go to MEPS. He's like, good, get in.
Let's roll.
That was it. When he told me he can get me in the Marine Corps, he's like, you don't want to be in the Army, be in the Marine Corps, of course. You know, and I'm like, yeah, let's do the Marine Corps. I'm like, what do I do about the Army guy? He was like, I'll be right back. Just walked next door and told him.
Yep, just let him know. So it's crazy, though. So you go, you get into MEPS, you pass everything, and then eventually you ship off to boot camp. So you close the chapter in your life, so to speak, to open up another one.
Start a whole new chapter, yep.
Which we'll discuss in a future podcast. That's what we talked about before. Those of you that are listening, we are going to have Greg back for a podcast next week. This way we can continue his story. I think his story is, one, great enough that needs to be told in separate sections. This way you can absorb what this man has been through and where he is headed. Let me tell you, Greg has the passion to be someone that's going to help many, many people. He's doing it through his avenue of being a real estate agent, but it's simply a way for him to get out there and reach and touch and help as many people as possible. Greg, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be here today. I want to thank you once again for your service. If I was a person, maybe I've been through something similar to what you have, and I just want to ask you some questions. Maybe I'm going through some guilt. Maybe I need to figure out a way to find a Marine recruiter or anything like that. Maybe I want to buy or sell a house. Tell me again how I reach you.
Yes, and again, the best way is going to be email. It's Greg, G-R-E-G, at musiccityexperts.com.
Awesome. Thanks again for being on the show, guys. Those of you that are listening, please stay tuned. Next week, we will have Greg's second part of his story. I look forward to it, man. Thanks again for being on.
Awesome. I appreciate it, and thank you for having me.
Yes, sir.